Welcome to the Learning Well podcast, where we take learning seriously, but not ourselves.
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Learning Well. We've got an interesting and, I hope, helpful show for you today. We're hosting the second in our series of things we should be scared of. In the month of October, we thought it would be fun to have that kind of theme. So we're talking about things we should be scared of, specifically immersive technology. But of course, we're not actually scared of it. And one of the main reasons is the person sitting across the table from me, Adam Navis. Adam, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Sure. My name, as you said, is Adam Navis. I'm a solutions architect at Mindspring, focusing on XR solutions. And if you don't know what XR stands for, we can get into
that
in a minute.
We're going to get there, yeah. Yeah, well, thank you. And so as we talked about in the last podcast, Jerry and I did, we know how to stay in our lanes. We talked at a high level. We have some understanding. At a certain point, we go off the rails. So we've invited Adam to join us because what I love and what's going to come out in this podcast is your, when we talked earlier, you talked about maybe not originally being involved in this and sort of learning as you went. And to me, that's ideal because you understand how to make this subject of interest, but also easy to understand for our listeners. And That's where we're hoping to go today.
Wonderful. Yeah, no, that is exactly my journey to be here talking to you today. I guess I would put the beginning of my journey maybe 4 or 5 years ago when the YouTube algorithm brought to me something about a software called Blender. It was free 3D modeling software. And I, for whatever reason, clicked on that video and I watched it and I was like, wow, this is a free tool. Mm-hmm. And so I downloaded it and it was just when a new version of the software came out. So it was a great time for me to step in. There were a lot of tutorials coming out and it felt like it did when I was a kid opening up a new package of Lego and you just took the pieces and started to put them together. And even though I knew I wasn't fully understanding what I was doing, and even though I knew I wasn't fully realizing the capabilities of the software, it was fun because I was doing things. I was making things. It was hands-on. I was diving into a lot of different tutorials. And along with that, which is where I would say anyone who's listening to this is going to have one of the biggest struggles, but also points of excitement and challenge, is thinking differently about how you conceive of learning and interacting. So when we say 3D, we all know what 3D is because there's three dimensions to things, right? We live in the world and we pick something up and we move it around and we look at it from different angles, just like when we were infants. We don't put things in our we don't put things in our mouths as much as maybe babies do, but we still move things around. Mm-hmm. We've gotten so used to trying to find ways of representing reality, right? Mm-hmm. Think of how in geometry we use perspective on a whiteboard or a chalkboard to help people understand a cone, for example.
Right, sure.
Or I was just thinking this morning about when I had to learn carbon chemistry and we took all those little C's and put little lines off it to different...
I think we have a ban on talking about math or science. I kid.
As someone who is not into math and science, this is my, like, oh, I was like, oh, if I had learned this, like geometry, being able to see things, to see connections between things in space is really, when we talk about 3D, we're not talking about necessarily the 3D glasses you put on at a movie theater, where it seems to jump out at you when you're watching. What we're talking about is really being able to move around an object and to see at its very fundamental level is to see things from different angles, to have depth and perspective. 'Cause obviously the software I mentioned earlier, you're still working on it through a computer screen, which is a flat 2D plane. And what excites me and what I think is challenging for people who've thought either textually, like what's the best way of communicating this information? It's through the written word, which I love.
Right. It's a big part of our business. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Or it's images, which is also amazing, or even videos, right? Which work linearly. You have a right. framing box to them, to which you say it's the edge of a screen, it's the edge of a TV of some kind that you look through. And what gets exciting and I think scary for people is that when we enter this new kind of realm, which isn't new, which is very much like the world around us, we can control what we pay attention to through where we point a phone or where we, if we're wearing a headset, where we look. And that is conceptually challenging for people who've been used to thinking step one, step two, step three, and in order in that way. So 3D can mean a lot of different things, but just that conceptual difference of why we did something first, second, third to 3D, where you can say, hey, I want to look at the backside of that. I want to rotate. I want to have a little more control about how that, how I interact with that. And then when we start talking about XR and AR, those are the ways we start to interact with those 3D elements.
Yeah, no, as we were preparing for this, I think that's how you and I determine, like, where would we start that is the most point of commonality for our listeners, something mm-hmm. that they do understand. And we'd even talked in our last podcast, Jerry and I did, about not the visual aspect, but of that linear when you are writing or designing learning. It's still very linear in a mm-hmm. 2D atmosphere. And it's a, what do I need to tell our learners or help our learners understand first, second, third? And when we were talking about some early VR experiences, like, wait a second, this isn't linear. They can do anything. And so now what are we going to do? How are we going to design this learning experience? Because if they move this way, what do I think, or that way, or what do I show? So it's a different way of thinking. And I think that's the part that is scary to people. Mm-hmm. But what I really think makes sense is if we start with 3D, like you said, and let's start there.
Right.
And then determine how are we going to interact with it through AR, through VR. Hopefully by the time we're done here, everyone will have a better understanding of ways to both design and develop it.
Yes, exactly. And I get very passionate about helping people be more and more comfortable. It really is a return to the way we interact with the world.
Yeah.
We have guides as parents or teachers who can even literally point at something and say, look at this thing. And we might have, we might move to a text-based where we're reading a book and then we reflect and then we take action. And then we kind of have a digital interaction where we're clicking on things next, we're answering questions, and there's a little more interactivity. Mm-hmm. And when we get into the 3D, AR, VR, there is a lot more choice, mm-hmm. which there's also the illusion of choice as well.
Right. It's not as much as
it's not extremely unlimited or unlimited. But it really gives us that sense of, for me, is a return to the way we interact with the world. A really good, if you've ever done a really good, experience, whether it's a 3D movie that you've been watching or a 360 movie or a video game, it feels natural.
Right. It feels very real, very authentic. Yeah.
The tutorials that you maybe got with a video game in the past would be like, press this button, do that.
Right.
Whereas once you're in a VR experience, it's more natural. It's intuitive. You pick things up the same way you would pick things up. And it just feels like you're in it. And it's very immersive, which is, of course, one of the powerful aspects of any kind of virtual reality or augmented reality experience.
Right. I mean, it has the potential to be so very powerful. And we're not going to digress into all of that. If for our listeners, Jerry and I talked quite a bit last week about just different kinds of use cases where it's best used and why. But I think helping our listeners understand with this 3D, at least it's helped me already. I mean, I can picture, and I love what you're saying too, just even to set people at ease. Like, this is how we interact with the world. I mean, if you think about even to like the most basic level, you know, kindergarten or preschool, and you're trying to explain math or other things, what do? Well, we call them manipulatives, right? Mm-hmm. Children pick up small things, they move them around, they stack them, they put them together. That's how we figure our world out. Somewhere along the way, we kind of lose that. And we go to pencil and paper and visual. And again, there's nothing wrong with that necessarily. We're processing in our brains instead. But this immersive, I think, gives us that opportunity to return back and becomes very powerful.
Yeah, I think, and it doesn't just stop at kindergarten or first grade.
Right.
Like, it's very helpful. A globe, a map. Mm-hmm. These are all representations of things that we can't experience. We can't, unless you're an astronaut,
right.
You're not going to experience the world as a whole in that manner, at that scale. Or there are things that are really small mm-hmm. that we have to draw pictures of. But having a 3D model of that we can interact with allows us to experience the world in ways that we just can't. It's still a representation, mm-hmm. but it's a very, I know it's virtual, but it's also tangible. And I always like to say whatever's really big, what's ever really small, mm-hmm. what's ever really expensive,
right.
what's ever really dangerous, whatever's far away, these things lend themselves to a virtual experience because we can't have them, or very, very few people can have them in this life. And it's just a great opportunity. You don't have to be intimidated by the technology if you focus on that experience. What you know
right.
and how that might be better translated, it's just a tool. I am not I'm not trying to proselytize anyone to say like this is going to change the world.
Right.
It's another tool in the history of tools of human communication that that people can use. Sometimes it will lend itself to that. Other times there might be a more efficient way communicating.
No, I still remember. No slam on the group I'm talking about. I won't even mention them, but it was very early days of virtual reality, and it was a sort of a mock demo of a doctor's office. And they were talking about, cleanliness practices and OSHA rules. And in virtual reality, they were training people how to like find the trash and pick it up, which was cool. Like it was obviously virtual reality. It was very cool. But I'm like, but couldn't we just like walk in the room and show people how to pick stuff off the floor. There was nothing dangerous. There were no syringes. It was so, again, to your point about it being a tool, the cool thing, though, is that there are so many great use cases where it is powerful. We do want to use it there. But again, it's a tool, and we need to choose the situation carefully where that tool gives us the best learning. So I like how we're thinking. We're thinking first about 3D. Now, 3D can obviously be popped into, and we see it often in just traditional e-learning. People are manipulating things. And so we want to go beyond that. This is immersive technology. So let's talk a little bit then about VR, because I think that's where people jump at this point. Mm-hmm. Like, now, what am I going to do with this 3D model? What world can I put it in?
Right. And there's obviously been virtual reality has been around for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. It kind of comes in ebbs and flows. And I think when the COVID pandemic hit and the Oculus headset came out, that was like the perfect formula for a lot of people start to be exposed to this technology. And it came out and the technology was at a level that it really was accessible to people.
Yeah, it definitely felt like there was a change at that point.
Right. And so you had a lot of people now experiencing this. Now, has it ebbed a little bit? Probably. Mm-hmm. In its cultural popularity, as people can go out and interact with the world again. But it still exposed a lot of people to understanding of VR environment. So when we say VR, we mean virtual reality, which is a fully enclosed environment. You're going to have a headset with you're not going to have any, you might have some minimal, because you want to stay safe.
Yeah, you have to be in a certain area.
You'll have some minimal auditory input just from your environment to keep you safe, but you're going to be fully immersed in that experience. It could be a video, it could be a simulation or a game it could be anything you want to create. And that's the power of the virtual reality that you are limited only by your imagination and your skill to create these 3D objects. So you can have games, you can have simulations that would be aren't grounded in reality at all. So you can have avatars, you can have monsters, you can have complex situations, you can have whole worlds.
Make-believe
worlds that you get to interact with. And I think that's sometimes intimidating to people if they're like, well, that's, it is a big lift. Right. I'm not sure that a fully formed game is necessarily what we're talking about today. But there are elements that people are using. I think one of the things that is, I think, most exciting to me is travel. People who really want to experience the world, who can go to a place and have an experience of that place in virtual reality, because I think that's one of the things you can never get too much of. And especially as people get older, I think virtual reality for aging people who can't travel, who can't get out of their houses, is going to be a real growth area for people.
Yeah, I would agree. In fact, I just saw an article the other day that was talking about having exposure to blue spaces. All they really meant was water, but just the ability to, for most people, it makes them relax, and you just feel like it doesn't even have to necessarily be like a beach tropical, but just that exposure to the water and the waves and whatever is calming. And it wasn't a study per se, but the ability to have access to that in a virtual reality world, I think,
I think it's amazing. Those experiences, like you forget. I mean, where we live, we have all four seasons, but there's people who've never seen, like you say, seen the ocean, who've never seen snow, who've never seen, the top of a mountain or any of those things in life that you start to take for granted, or that you say, oh, okay, I have some reference point of that. But to have that experience, even virtually, can be very powerful and very transforming.
Well, and I think it speaks to the way that we would think as learning and development professionals too. It's not just, and we've always known imagery is powerful, but is there a way that you can set up an environment where people learn best, and taking into account color? And we do that with imagery in traditional e-learning, but to create an entire atmosphere where people feel relaxed and calm and focused. And
that's a really good point, because I always like to say place wins.
Yeah.
Right. Like wherever you are, that's where your time and attention is. And I think that there are people talk about like walking into the Oval Office and being overwhelmed by the grandeur of it. But if you were in a virtual environment, if you were like at a prestigious college or university sitting there, with that environment, you might learn differently.
Yeah.
Than you would if you're just sitting at your kitchen table. Mm-hmm. Whether it's good or bad, I don't know. But it would be definitely a different experience to learn in that environment. And I look forward to, learning more about, is there an ideal learning environment for you as an individual, or for in general, how do you create those spaces? I know classrooms have been designed for efficiencies, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever you need to do in that space. But if you're not limited by that, how do you do a laboratory? How do you make a lecture hall, a conference room, a classroom that really is unlimited, except driven by how people learn?
Right. Well, and some of that is being done already, especially for students or adults even who need freedom from distractions or need certain environments where, like we talked about, the ability to focus better or to minimize distractions that might be actually like painful for them. Like they, it's too loud or it's too bright or too, whatever the situation is for that kind of student. But so I think people, like you mentioned, have experience with virtual reality. They understand the concept. Mm-hmm. We, and our focus here, our audience obviously is learning and development professionals. So we mentioned in the last podcast, like we're not gamers at that end of the spectrum per se with fully immersive or like military training or aviation. We're also not at the other end of the spectrum. We sit somewhere in the middle, right? So how can a learning and development professional, how do they even begin to think about, like, do I need software? I need someone that knows how to code. I need headsets. Like, what does all of that kind of thing look like?
It really should be driven by what you're trying to accomplish. So if you're trying to train someone on a piece of equipment, that is a great, you'd start with creating a 3D model of that equipment.
Okay.
And then you could put a step-by-step instructions on the virtual, you know, the 3D model mm-hmm. of how to, let's say, set up the machine. Say it's a three steps. So if I can paint a picture, you know, someone you're trying to train would put on a headset. They would activate the experience. They would see in front of them a virtual replica of the machine they're going to be working on. And then step one would come up. They would be able to interact with that button or the machine itself. They would move on to step two. They would move on to step three. They could repeat that process again and again and really not worry about making mistakes because everybody's going to. So they make all those mistakes in a virtual environment. Yeah. It's not going to be something that someone as an individual is going to do because the complexity of creating that experience requires either some scans or some modeling of those assets.
Right. You need special training. Like what kinds of people would I need on my team if I wanted to do this?
So you would need a 3D artist.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And you would need some kind of software in which to arrange the objects. The way I like to explain things, and if you're working in this world of virtual reality or augmented reality, it usually gets anchored in something.
Okay.
So it's either going to be you make a model or a scan of an object, say a desk or a workstation or something like that, or you scan outward to the whole room.
So you have that environment that you're going to start
right.
to work in.
So you either have an object or an environment mm-hmm. in which you, I like to call it the canvas.
Right.
In which you're going to digitally paint. And I like to think of it as in that space, once you have that object, once you have that space, it's like you have a little bit of a packet of post-it notes or sticky notes, if we're going to go unbranded.
Right.
And you can walk around that space and you can write, you can say, you know, I want this here. And you put those little post-it notes all around. But those post-it notes can be 3D objects. They can be arrows or directional signs. They can be text. They can be videos. They can be almost anything.
Yeah.
But you need a 3D artist to do that. And you need some software or a person to assemble that. At Mindspring, we have a proprietary software we use, but there are other products out there. We think ours is really good.
Right. Well, there's some advantages to it. And so, again, we, you know, on this podcast, we are sponsored by Mindspring, and I will include some notes, some information in our show notes, because we do have what we think is a pretty cool software that does things that some of this other software doesn't do.
Right.
So I wanted to get us to that point only because we promised our listeners we'd be technical, and some of them are trying to think, okay, I get this, but how do I actually do it? Well, yes, you need software to design this, but software can require you to actually have software knowledge and be a coder to use,
right.
Or it can be easier. And that's kind of the world we're trying to get at this point.
Right. And we really, the software is built with the premise that people who aren't code heavy should be able to create an experience. So there are different widgets and different blocks that get kind of tied together sequentially. So you still, if you're familiar with the logic of a storyline or building a mm-hmm. course that way, this platform can it works very similarly as far as like the logic in and how much time or what you want things to do. You can start with a pre-built template and then alter it, or you can kind of build your own.
I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
Those are the things I know for sure I wanted to get to, because I know our listeners have understanding and with storyline, or mm-hmm. we use the analogy of, for example, like WordPress to use a website where you used to have to code it all. Now you can grab a block and you can grab this, and there's already a pre-built widget to add to for payment or whatever it might be. So yeah, whatever you want to tell us about that, I think will be helpful.
Well, of course, as the software, there are a lot of people who are like, I'm not interested. Right. We're happy to help. We're happy to do that work and, you know, help deliver what you want to deliver. There's certain people who just don't have the capacity in-house to add another set of skills.
Yeah, Yeah, right. And it's definitely more sophisticated.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that totally makes sense.
Yeah.
There are other people who say, you know what? I'm not too many lily pads away from competency here.
Yeah, right.
I want to dive in, show me what it can do, but then set me up on my own. And then, of course, there's other people who are thinking, oh, just let me go to town. I know exactly how to do this. I'll let you know if I have any, if I run into any problems, but just let me go. And that's really the flexibility of this platform. So anytime you can take this software and you build what we call scenes.
Okay.
So you have to, you have to think of it in terms of the scene, like what I described a minute ago of, I want this to happen. Now a scene can happen sequentially. So you activate a scene, someone's in virtual or in a real environment, and the first thing happens, then a second thing happens, then a third thing happens. Otherwise, you can have things happen in space.
Right.
So
right.
I like to say just in, you know, we talk about just in time trainings.
Yeah.
I also think the power of just in space trainings.
Yeah.
So because of our phones, we'll use phones for an augmented reality experience. You might be in a corner of a room and your phone, which has been activated, you've activated the scene, it knows where you are in that space. And depending on how far you are from each space, you might activate a different experience, which is really powerful because then you don't just have the training or the troubleshooting when you need it, you have it where you need it as well.
It's very powerful.
So you don't have to necessarily be in a separate orientation room where you go spend
the training room
where you spend a full day and you're bored and you're tired.
Yeah.
You might be able to do, you might still have to do that, but you might have that reinforcement. So you're in a factory floor, you're on a service call, whatever you need. And you can activate and get those reminders and those recurring experiences based on where you are in a building or in a room. And I think that is a really fun and exciting thing. One of the things that excites me the most about this platform specifically is seeing how people use it. Because it is like making a website. Like, yeah, we talk about websites. But what is a web? A website can do 1,000 different things.
Right. It depends on what your needs are.
And I think that's where what I want people to leave this is like, yes, there's augmented reality. Yes, there's virtual reality. Yes, there's 3D. But talking about those things is like talking about websites. You have to know what you want the website to do.
Yes,
you have to know what
yes,
you want your
right.
your experience to be. Because once you do that, then you get make certain choices, and it actually becomes limiting, or I will say it puts parameters on what you're trying to do, which is actually, I find very freeing.
No, and from a learning perspective, right? Like we should have our objectives for this experience. And like you said, it's a tool. So we have these objectives, but the learning and the learning science is the same, but now I'm going to deliver it differently. I'm going to deliver it in a more powerful way, but I still have these parameters. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to design these scenes, but I'm not going to design this scene over here. Or I think it's been quite a few years we designed a like an active shooter situation. Now, again, it was more the audience was, there's nothing that can replace like practice of that in real life, obviously.
Right.
But this was more for, say, a student coming in at the community college level into a law enforcement program, something just to help them understand sensory-wise what happens to you. But that was one of the first things we realized, right? Like, okay, well, we have this layout. Like you said, we sort of developed our scene and it was, a couple different office spaces, whatever. But can they walk into the closet? Well, is there a purpose for them being in the closet? Like, do they need to understand, or do we want to sort of put our parameters around these three areas and what do we want them to? So I think, again, going back to our let's not be scared of these things, the things we keep emphasizing to learning professionals are that part stays the same. The cool part is that you just get to expand your horizons of how and where those scenes happen. And it sounds like the software, while there is a learning curve, there's an ability to, it's somewhat familiar to software that a lot of us are used to using.
Yeah, I think when you peel back the curtain and you can find, if you like we said a minute ago, if you're familiar with the storyline logic, you're going to be able to transition pretty well to the logic of this ProViz platform.
Okay.
But I want to pick up on one thing you said about the experience, right? Like, we know the information is there. The internet has tons of information. If you wanted to know, how do I be a good sales rep? How do I, you know, troubleshoot this machine? You can find that information. How do you change the front headlight in your car?
Right.
You can find YouTube. All those things.
Yeah.
But having that experience and that practice, we let our kids and their cousins stay home this weekend because we were going to a wedding. So we were running through the questions that we did as we said, okay, what do you do if someone rings the doorbell?
Yep.
Well, tell them tell them my parents aren't home. We're like, no, right. Tell them,
you know. You used to say that.
And they'll be like, well, we gave them some options. Yeah. And they're like, oh, we'll say one of those things. I'm like, no, pick one now.
Right?
Like before you get in that scenario, an emotion takes over.
Yep. Right.
And you start to feel and you start, we all have that with, we start a new job. When you're in that moment, you're like, I had three choices. What am I supposed to do? If you can lower your anxiety, if you can feel more comfortable, if you can experience those things, which we all do,
right?
Even in environments that we know are safe, we experience, like even coming on here, the more I've done podcasts, the more comfortable I am,
right?
For sure. The first time you do something, it's not good.
Right.
And then you get better and you get more comfortable. Yeah. And doing that virtually, for people who are planning these kind of trainings, thinking about that aspect of things, about lowering people's anxieties through virtual training, is a very, very important thing. Mm-hmm. And I think isn't going to just be about efficiency. A lot of times we have a lot of conversations about what's our ROI? How do we improve efficiency? But I think the aspect of lowering people's anxiety and raising their comfortability in using virtual tools is a very powerful. It's not the same measure, but it really can pay dividends.
Yeah, we touched on that last week, saying like in a manufacturing situation, if you don't have to shut down a machine or an entire line to do training once a month or whatever, the ROI on that is like immediate, recognizable, and that's a perfect situation for it. I think it's also perhaps a little easier to understand in terms of design because it is fairly linear. First do this, then do this. If this happens, do this, but it's still sort of a set of parameters. But to your point, what Jerry and I were discussing was how interesting the world is quickly becoming of either lowering anxiety or helping people have that immersive experience where they can practice over and over. So there's the ability to track, even we were talking about in surgery, like how mistakes are made and in what way are those mistakes made virtually so that we don't have those in real life, because we can actually track, you know, our new residents typically seem to do this. Well, what's the reason for that? Why did they make that mistake? There's something that's not connecting and we can fix that.
Right.
And soft skills, like you said, and lowering, in the example I gave earlier, it was all about sensory and we didn't understand this, but when you're in a pressured situation like that, your hearing sometimes goes, you hear certain things and not others. Your vision can often become very tunnel, like you might not see the whole space. And that's because your heart rate is elevated, your adrenaline is racing. And to help people try and go through that a few times, so at least they understand. And I will tell you, like every time we practiced it and tried it, it was very stressful. And we knew what we were walking into.
Right.
But that real sort of environment was very interesting.
And I think for people who are used to thinking through and designing learning paths, it's going to be almost a step back a little bit. We have a lot of conversations. We're working with a grocery store right now to do a self-scan, a point of sale kind of training for their attendants. And at first we were having conversations about how they pick who to help. Right. Mm-hmm. And we were going to have the person pops up and they say, well, I'm a this age and this demographic, you know, do a little profile of who's there. And we had to step back from that because in reality, they don't know all those things.
No, not at all.
They're not given text information. They're not given audio information. They have to make judgments based on environmental cues.
Yeah. Yep.
So we actually had to strip down some of those things to say, what do you notice? What don't you notice? Hmm. And then make a scenario where they had to go through it and then be reflective on it. So that it was actually closer to what they're going to experience. There's still some guidance going on, but we had to really think in a new way. And I think for those people who are listening in their particular industries or environments, thinking about starting, you get to start with the lived actual experience and then kind of step back from that and say, well, we had a manual, you know, a 50-page book that we had people read, but that didn't seem to do things. Then we had a digital training that we could had some videos to supplement that made things better. But now let's get as close to the real thing as we can and maybe use all those pieces. I'm not, I don't want people to hear this and be like, feel threatened. I've been doing this for, you know, 30 years. No, no, no. All those things have their place.
Yes.
This is just one more tool in the toolbox.
Absolutely. And no, you're without any pre-planning, you're just echoing what we always talk about on this podcast. So that's wonderful. Like picking the right tool for the situation. And oftentimes, obviously it's several tools. Mm-hmm. So we spent a lot of time talking about VR. And I do think the interesting thing in the industry is that it's been probably like I was talking about that early experience. It was pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. There was so much like VR is the next big thing we have to. And then we started to try to roll it out. And it's not as if we weren't cognizant of this. But, you know, people, managers in companies, and you do have to. Are we giving headsets to everyone? Do they still have to come to this room? Because this is where the equipment is. Now, we can expand the horizon of the room through the virtual reality. But there's a lot of. There's just a lot to figure out, and it can be done, and it is being done. But I think at a certain point, we sort of saw this pivot then, like, oh, maybe augmented reality is perhaps a little bit simpler. Not that it's less sophisticated, but the way that we roll it out and the equipment that we use can be more powerful and done more easily. So help our listeners. What's the difference, though, between those two?
So if virtual reality is unlimited because you're kind of closing off yourself from wherever you are in the world, augmented reality is a layer upon which you're not always seeing, but is based on wherever you are. So if you go back to my analogy with the little post-it notes, if you walk around your room, whichever room you're listening to this in, and you put a few post-it notes around, augmented reality toggles on and off those post-it notes.
Yep.
So you could have different color post-it notes. Yep. You could say, I want to see the yellow post-it notes, not the green post-it notes. Now, again, those post-it notes aren't actually post-it notes, but they are anything you want it to be, anything digital. We could go into the technical ways of making those things, but conceptually, it's using an interface such as a head-mounted wearable, which is different than the virtual. Mm-hmm. It's kind of more glass. You can see through it, but it also projects things. It maps things onto your lived reality. Or it is using a phone or a tablet, which is probably what
most of our listeners are used to.
Have used. We all have one or more than one sometimes.
Right.
And that uses the camera, the LIDAR, which is kind of a lasers, we'll call it.
Sure. Okay.
And the kind of gyroscopes, the motion controls in those devices to understand where you are. And it maps it onto a virtual twin of either a object or a environment.
Okay.
So you can have those canvases. The technology will find those and match them up, which when you conceive of that, there's a lot that you can do with that.
Give us some examples. I think that
so you can look for errors and flaws. So if you've put together an object, a few blocks, and you've done it incorrectly. Think of a Jenga tower. I think most people understand what Jenga is. If you've got some blocks sticking out, it's not perfectly straight, it uses that virtual object to kind of quality control. And you can say, oh, there's an error here. And it can call that out. And then you can take a picture of that.
Okay, yeah.
As a quality control. So that's really good in manufacturing.
Right.
So that's a little different than the training, but it's how it matches it up. It also you can create instructions to build that Jenga tower. Maybe you want you want it straight up, but maybe you want it, you know, two half sizes. So you can create instructions that find that those instructions, instead of being in a virtual environment, are mapped onto whatever tabletop or surface you're working on. You march through those steps, you record it, and then people are trained. It can be a way of both having quality control, also having a training. And then I will say one of the more fun ones that I think is really a simple a QR code initiation. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people are familiar with QR codes because they're very common in restaurants now.
Right, right.
They kind of faded away, but again, because of COVID, people became more comfortable with them. So having a fun, whimsical experience where you could, be in a room, scan a QR code, and when you look through your phone or tablet, you see butterflies flying right. all around the room.
Right.
And I often think when we talk about anxiety or people, mm-hmm. I think of children's hospitals,
yes.
I think of doctor's right. office, pediatricians, where kids are feeling nervous. They come in, they're excited, they're maybe a little distracted by this, but that's okay too. And you could have that wonderful transformative experience, creative, artistic even, through what is being layered into your reality. And of course, you'll have that emotional reaction too, mm-hmm, of being like,
right.
wow, this is amazing. And you just, it makes you feel good.
Yeah, I think I know I had just recently looked at one of the projects we'd worked on, and it was office environment. But again, the difference was I wasn't putting on a headset. I was literally in this office space, but then I had my phone or the glasses, you know, in order to see. And then up popped over here on this window. Like, I just think of new hires, you mm-hmm. know, coming into a large corporation. And you have, like you said, so many things to be just your first day jitters, but to know where things are. And
right.
and that's a very simple use of it. And it's very simple to build, but to walk, I mean, I'm not going to say simple, I didn't do it, but a simpler application, you know, I walk around and I can see where things are using my phone, and it can point me to the next thing, but also up pops information. This is where right. This is how you get to that. What a easy, but again, I'm in that environment. And I just, for our listeners, want them to understand too, that's what augmented is. We're in the environment,
right.
but we have things, again, that were augmented, added into it that help me better understand or better learn.
Exactly. It's a thing that's hard to understand as we think about it. But when you see it, it just feels normal. I mean, it's a little strange at first because mm-hmm. you're like, that thing isn't there, but it really looks like it is. But, you know, you'll have people look at their phone and they'll see something kind of fun and clever, and then they kind of you have to look on the other side of your phone.
Yeah,
it's
right.
like, it's like when you see dogs or, you know, look in a mirror, and then they kind of go around the mirror, try to look at the backside.
Right.
And there's, it's, it, it does feel magical mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. And I have seen plenty of it, and it still strikes me that way of like, this is really, there's a jump that the technology asks you to take that you're like, this seems like a magic trick. And
yeah.
it's because it's all working in the background. Everything's been set up well. And it transports you in this way of saying like, wow, this is really, it tells an interesting story that pulls you in.
I was just going to say that it's the story aspect again, that draws you into the mm-hmm. experience. Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, Adam, I think our listeners are hopefully feeling less nervous, less scared, like we talked about for this month. Just listening to a little bit of the technical understanding of the differences. But the examples you gave, I think, and the metaphors really made it easier for me to understand, too, and just in terms of the technology. And again, we'll put a link to the software that we sell and use. This is not supposed to be a paid, nor is it a paid advertisement. But on the other hand, what you were talking about is a model called You Build, We Build, or We Build Together. And I do just love that model because it's just so aligned with who we are as a company. But even, you know, the guests on this podcast, like, we just want to help our listeners learn something new and feel more confident in what they're doing. So this ability to partner with us to build something, I mean, frankly, I'm kind of sort of itching to get over to the office and try it myself. So, but the idea of partnering with people to expand their horizons and to let them figure it out on their own and within a context of, oh, this is similar to software I've used in the past, but a little bit different. And I think the examples and just the way it's the use cases are just, they're exploding all the time with new use cases and new ways, and the cost is coming down, and it's really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So I always I love to end this podcast. I always end it with the question, what are you learning well now? And I'm very curious to hear what you have to say. We've had guests talk about all kinds of different things, but just so our listeners have a little bit of an insight into who you are, and it doesn't have to be related to this, but yeah. It could be. So are you learning well now?
So I am learning animation.
Oh.
So okay. It is taking those 3D objects mm-hmm. and then manipulating them, whether it's a location, a rotation, a scale. And it has been really, what I like about it and what really excites me is I've been on a very technical journey figuring out some of these things. And animation, especially animating characters, not just like, oh, we're going to move a block here to there, but animating a character and trying to make it really feel like life. It really pulls it. A lot of the principles from, you know, early Disney movies are still applicable today in 3D. There are some tools that make things a little easier within the software. But when I get to successfully follow a tutorial that moves a character and I'm not saying it takes on my personality, but you can start to see all the different layers. Mm-hmm. I get excited about that, but I also get excited about how the world opens up differently. I look at things differently. I look at squirrels move differently. I look at dogs and cats and how their feet, when are their feet touching the floor and when are they moving? How do they, four-legged creatures, how do people move? Where is our center of gravity? How do we lead with our shoulders opposed to our hands? And that is super fun. I don't know how it's going to apply to anything, but I'm okay with that because I'm really just enjoying the journey.
Well, but I think it does apply. I mean, it's one of the reasons I ask it on purpose on this podcast, because everyone that we have on here, like, we're all wired. Like, we have this like creativity within us, and it takes different forms for different people, right? I mean, we've had all sorts of answers from learning how to farm on a small farm to books that are being read to, like you said, more technical animation. But it's more really about, like you said, how does the world look different to us now? Because we're creating something, we're curious about something, and we're learning more about it. And I love that. When we first started years ago getting into e-learning and then the animation and then like commercials, you know, you watch all of that differently too, or on TV, or I guess nobody watches commercials anymore, but you know, what does the animation look like on there? What does that audio sound like? What story are they telling? Like you said, the human form or any kind of animal form, like what does that look like? How would I animate it? So I love that. And you said you were watching YouTube videos, and I mean, there's just so many ways to learn things now that I think that's fun too, because it calls out. I think a lot of us use YouTube videos or other videos, and I love the premise and the hope of augmented reality, because there's always a point in a YouTube video where I'm like, huh, it doesn't look like that where I'm working. You know, I'm under the sink and my sink doesn't have that part, so now what am I supposed to do, right? But that whole concept of augmented reality would make that easier too, so
yeah.
Well, I just want to thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate your insight. I'm looking so forward to just diving more into this world of immersive reality and just seeing all the positive things that are coming from it. And I want to thank our listeners today, too. So you can interact more with us on our MindSprings Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn anytime this podcast is released. And make sure to comment and like. We'd love to interact with you. We know your time is a gift, and we just thank you for spending it with us. And thanks again for listening.
Thanks again for tuning in to the Learning Well podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please leave some feedback on whatever platform you're streaming on. We'd really appreciate it. We'll see you in the next episode.